Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What an overnight we've had at the Euros. Fantastic action, fantastic emotion. It's what football is all about. We will be celebrating Denmark's progression to the round of 16 and all the overnight action in today's episode of the Gigapod, and looking ahead to another big one where England will be looking to progress. But boy, they are not going to have it their own way on Wednesday morning. So much to talk about. Let's get into it.
Oh, how about that? Christensen!
Yeah, as I said, Denmark, what a story. Belgium triumphant. Austria through as well. So there is much to talk about, as well as Netherlands winning comfortably against North Macedonia. Jake Rosengarten is back to help me walk through all of that again. How are you, Jake?
Mate, walking in on an absolute wave. How good was that?
It was brilliant stuff. It's what my other pundit today, Luke Wilkshire, called on the couch. That's football. That's what it's all about. Luke, great to see you back on the podcast for the first time in the Euros, and what a morning to be doing so.
Oh, it's been brilliant. I think the biggest thing you talk about, the Denmark and the fact that supporters, seeing the emotion of the fans and what it meant to the Danish was phenomenal, and that just shows what the beautiful game of football does and what it's all about.
So, you know what? Let's start actually at the end today, because it's still so fresh in our minds, and I don't want to say we got carried away, because it's what we've missed. We've watched so much football because we love football, but then when you see that, you remember what it's part of, which is this amazing emotion and roller coaster that we've fallen in love with. You were on deadline, Jake. You had to put together 1,000 on words while enjoying that. How did you do so, and what did you take out of it?
Well, I mean, these are the most pleasurable parts of the job, I'd say, Dave. I mean, you don't get much better mornings than this morning. I will point out that I was so excited that Dave actually had to take out a few superlatives from my piece. I was too excited. But I mean, just what a great story. I don't think it can be topped at Euro 2020, to be honest with you. I mean, from the lowest low to the highest high. I mean, after everything that happened with Christian Eriksen and being forced to play on and to come up trumps, but not just come up trumps, but in the way that Denmark just rose. And even with adversity, again, with the way that it played out, I think it was literally perfect for mine. Couldn't have been any better.
I'll tell you one way it can play out is if they go on and go deep into the tournament. That's one way it can get topped. But the brilliant part of it, the emotion was amazing. The resilience was amazing, Luke. But they also finally, at the end, got the reward for their footballing quality, which they hadn't because of circumstances thus far.
Yeah, they did. And you know, going into the game, I think they had 43 shots and only scoring the one goal. I think it was 7 shots against and conceding 3. But they have quality, and we'd seen that. They didn't get their rewards in the previous games, but they certainly did this morning, and rightly so. But for me, again, you talk about that, the lowest they were and what happened with Eriksen and how the strength within that squad, you know, starting from the manager to the players, you know, it's just been phenomenal. And to see that elation during the game, after the game, with them and the supporters of what they've been through, what they've witnessed, you know, it's fantastic, and, you know, it's a story in itself.
On the football side of things, though, I think one of the major question marks around this Denmark team entering the tournament, even before the loss of Eriksen, was whether they really had that cutting edge and firepower to score enough goals to go deep in this tournament, when you consider the fact that Yusuf Poulsen and Martin Braithwaite, the two sort of key men up front, aren't particularly prolific at club level. And I think this morning, especially with the emergence, not emergence so much of Christian Damsgaard, because he's had a huge season in Serie A.
Mikael Damsgaard replacing Christian Eriksen.
Oh, jeez. There you go.
But you know what? But that's a, you know, I understand that why we'd say that, because he was replacing Christian Eriksen and stepped up into his shoes.
Yeah. To be honest, he wasn't even in the 11 in the opening match, and he's scored an absolute stunner, and his name will be on everyone's lips. But Luke, you mentioned it on the coverage, the way that they had 4 individual goal scorers today, including Andreas Christensen. The goals are coming, and you could just feel the rising tide with this Denmark team as they really pushed on and realised what they were about to achieve. They just sort of stepped up to another level for mine.
They did, and in footballing terms, they did. The Damsgaard goal was so good, because at that point, both games were deadlocked. You're kind of thinking, oh, there's got to be a twist here, but it was really sort of stuck and simmering, and he didn't have much to play with. That's a player who's got the world at his feet if he can pull that out then and there.
there's moments in games where you need that special something, and special players have that to create something from nothing. And he did. His first touch was fantastic, in the way he hit the ball, caught the keeper completely off guard. A fantastic strike, and like I say, 20 years old, to come in and really stamp his authority, and he that changed the game. You know, goals change games, and special players change games, and he's done that.
Denmark have potential. You mentioned it. They play Wales now, which you'd have to say is an opportunistic pathway, because they probably match them pound for pound, if not more. From a footballer's perspective, in terms of momentum that you can carry from this, it's almost the perfect tonic now.
Oh, it is. I think, you know, and football's all about momentum, you know, and from where they've been, and they've built it up, with not just their performances, but, you know, you can see that driving force behind them and the belief now having four goals. They'll look at it and say, you know what, Wales, we've got a real good chance here to progress.
You can't really have more of a high than this, though, Luke. Let's be honest. I mean, in the history of the Euros, they are the first team ever to lose their first two games and then go through. That is their biggest win at the Euros in 37 years. I mean, Denmark must just be riding an absolute wave of emotion. And against a team like Wales, who, I mean, I think Denmark especially, you look at them, their strengths, they're actually on paper quite good defensively. They've got a very strong defense. When you look at on paper, obviously Schmeichel in goal is strong, but you've got a back three of, so it's Vestergaard, Christensen, and the third one is...
Off top of my head, I cannot remember.
Well, there you go. But the third one's also strong. It's a very, very good defense. And against the Wales
Simon,
team...
Simon Carr.
Oh, of course, the captain. Yeah. Mr. Inspirational himself. Yeah. But against a team who relies so heavily on the likes of Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, I think they may actually go all right in blunting them, for mine.
It's a good matchup. It's a good matchup. In terms of the four goal scorers we mentioned, there's a lovely thing happening in terms of underdog stories during the tournament. The Atalanta scorer Mahler today, that fourth goal. That was also, you guys mentioned it off air, you're buzzing about it, Luke, the ability that he had to sum up the situation, which shows that in a clutch moment, not only do Denmark have quality like we saw with the goals from long distance, but afforded a bit of space and afforded a bit of composure, they've got a little bit to offer as well, which that we didn't see in those first two games. But when you actually look at their tournament, if they'd come into it, they would have said, Belgian game's a bonus. The other two games are where we're going to pick up our points. The first game was unforeseen circumstances. No one could have predicted it. So they're probably just about where they want to be.
Yeah, they are. And look, let's be honest, the first game and obviously the circumstances, but you don't take away, they still should have won that game against Finland. You know, so that, but you talk about the quality and the composure. That was in transition, but you know, you talk about a team. This is a team. This is not about any individual. This is a real team, and you saw that both on and off the field and what it meant. And when you got a team, forget, you know, your individual stars. You can progress and you can cause problems for anyone you play.
That could potentially be almost the lesson of this Euros, depending on how it plays out. When you think about the way that Italy have started, they're also in a similar vein. Not necessarily dependent on a single superstar, but a team, the sum of its parts, under Roberto Mancini. So you wonder, sort of going forward, whether a Denmark can sort of pull off a bit of an upset, although there are definitely some superstars going around, as we saw in the other game.
Yeah, look, Thomas Sørensen, before the tournament, before anything had happened in terms of twists and turns, said that they've got the quality and the belief that they can go all the way through the quarterfinals, and that may be just where they end up. Now, Russia won't, and the most disappointing thing, Luke, probably for your former fans and teammates over in Russia, is that they were actually in a position to go through in third at 1.2, and at the end, conceding those late goals puts them out of the tournament. They're going home.
Yeah, they are. They're going home. And look, let's be honest. I think they didn't deserve to go through. They simply weren't good enough. They've been criticised back in Russia after the first game. Very one-dimensional, playing off Zuba. Mm. You know, and you can't be like that at that level. So they in the end, they're going home. And that's you know, the table doesn't lie. The table doesn't lie.
A lot of mistakes for mine. I think they had a very clear identity of what they were trying to do. And you saw it this morning. Throughout, especially the opening part of that game, because before Damsgaard stepped up, Denmark actually looked like they didn't have a lot of ideas, to be honest with you. I mean, Russia sitting, pressing high, but then once the press was beaten, sitting deeper and just frustrating them, and then playing Juba and obviously Moranchuk and Golovin playing off him. But again, the second goal, the one that Poulsen scored, was an absolute gift, and they did it a few times throughout this tournament.
Yeah, and you can't do that at this level. They'll be disappointed. But yeah, there's a few goals and moments in the game you look at and you just go, oh, that can't happen at this level. That can't happen. And it did. And like I said, they just simply weren't good enough. And in the end, rightly so, they finished bottom of the group.
And they weren't good enough in a situation where the door probably had opened for them to potentially progress when they might not have fancied it, or where they might not have been fancied beforehand. And by that, I mentioned the fact that Finland and the way that the group was positioned going into the last day, everyone was up for grabs. What happened down the road, not down the road, down at the same time, made this such an exciting morning. It wasn't just one game, it was the drama simultaneously, where at one point the group was flipping this way, that way, all at the same time. Romelu Lukaku's toenail was adjudged offside at the same moment that Russia got a penalty to get back into the other contest. And that's what's going to make the next few days so exciting. But for in total, Belgium had the quality and that won out in the end.
It did. One thing I want to point out is, though, that the way this morning played out was actually quite indicative of how unique this Euros is, because Russia and Denmark played in Copenhagen and Russia were the home team in their home kit. And meanwhile, at the same time, it wasn't down the road, but it was in Russia. It was Belgium playing Finland in Russia. So just unique, quite interesting.
And it was very confusing because we're lucky enough to have both games on top of each other. And it was red and white against red and white. And there was genuinely times I actually forgot which game I was watching. So it was pretty interesting. But Finland, they came, look, they knew that what they were going to do. They were going to sit back. I think Timo Pukki had one. Had more touches in his own half than the other. They had one touch in the opposition box in the first half and it nearly prevailed, but Belgium were kind of sleepwalking to victory, weren't they?
Yeah, well, in the end, you know, you realise the quality that a Belgian side has. They know they can't go toe-to-toe with them. They're always going to do that. You know, and they knew a point would be enough for them to go through. But in the end, Belgium, with the quality that they have, it's going to shine through. Although they made eight changes, when you're bringing in Hazard, De Bruyne, Witzel, but Marlon, you know, the quality that's coming in and with Lukaku still playing up top, they're always going to get that.
So you mentioned Italy before in terms of identity. We'll speak about the Netherlands a little bit in a moment, who have been very exciting to watch. I feel like Belgium haven't had to do much to get to the round of 16. They were pretty much outplayed by Denmark for a half, and then Kevin De Bruyne came on and bang, 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 with his individual brilliance got them through. I'm not going to say, are we convinced? Because I don't think they've had the opportunity to convince us. But where do you put Belgium? Is it almost like they have just got these two or three or four unbelievable individuals? It actually doesn't matter where they're at. They have the capacity to go deep.
I think they're a team you can never write them off when you've got the individual quality of a De Bruyne, of a Lukaku, of a Hazard. I mean, even like you think about the other guys that are around them, Carrasco, Mertens, Tielemans, like there's just quality everywhere. They're a great side. You're 100% right. Yet to be tested. I mean, I think it's interesting, especially because Italy also haven't been tested. And you think about France, who were tested and didn't come through. Germany lost their opening game, bounced back. Obviously, there's another game left in that group. So I think it's quite delicately poised. I don't see a reason why Belgium can't go all the way. But there's also nothing to suspect that they're on another level.
Or that they're unbackable or anything like that. Anything this morning that made you think maybe, you know, De Bruyne, he can win this on his own. Hazard's coming back into it. They could start him. What did you take out of what you saw today?
They have quality. And De Bruyne, for me, when he's in the form that he's in, he's shown in that 30 minutes. And then today, he can change games. He can win games. He can be the difference in a tournament. And I'm sure he will be. You know, it's time for Belgium. This has to be their moment with their so-called golden generation. It's sort of now or never, you know, the way it's poised. And, yeah, they've cruised through the group, but they've done what they had to do.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll build into it. And like all good teams going into tournaments, you don't want to peak too early. You don't want to be playing your best football in the group stages. You want to get through it, and then you want to be starting to peak.
Yeah. And Lukaku is right where he wants to be. Everyone, you know, there's no questions at the moment. Is Lukaku going to step up on the big stage? He's scoring goals at the Euros. I think maybe where my doubt lies, and it's not so much doubt, it's just that any questions that you might have had about Belgium coming into the tournament, they haven't had the opportunity to necessarily answer. Even today, the changes were defensive, so we saw different people come in. You can't say we've seen their best 11 roll out. So just up for grabs for me. Just see how they go. And I'm not sold that they're unbackable world number ones. I think they're right up in the mix with everyone else.
Agreed. But on what Luke was saying about De Bruyne, I think he has already shown in 1.5 games at this Euros that he's pretty much peerless in Europe in terms of playmaking. He has just gone to another level. His chance creation is just ridiculous.
I guess that's where the Ballon d'Or shout came out in the middle of the post-game show as well, Luke, in that if Belgium do go almost all the way, if not all the way, he is going to be the catalyst. No matter how many good players they've got, he's going to be the catalyst.
Yeah, he's shown that, like saying that the game and a half that he's played, that he's crucial to them to go to that next level. When you talk about being a top team, but being the team that can potentially win this tournament, he's going to be crucial for them.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Earlier in the night, so we had Belgium seal their top spot. We had Denmark going through in second. Now, I say a nervous wait for Finland to find out. It can't be nervous because they've overachieved what they suspected. But now that they're in the position to potentially go through, they'll be sweating and hoping that they can create further history and further romance and be another fairy tale in this competition going forward. We do know that Denmark will play Wales, as I said, but the Belgium opponent is still up for grabs. It could be one of the third place teams. We don't know quite yet who that's going to be. What we do know is earlier in the night, the Netherlands, who were first anyway, they beat North Macedonia. I say comfortably. North Macedonia were value for entertainment in this game, but goals to Memphis Depay and a brace as Gini Wijnaldum continues the Dutch's momentum. The big result of the morning, which we'll start with first, is that Austria did win 1-0 and go through in second place ahead of Ukraine. There's two ways to look at this. One is Austria finally got their, you know, what sorted. Second of all, Ukraine were undoubtedly disappointing when everything went on the line.
Even Andriy Shevchenko, their legendary manager, admitted after the game, he basically said, we didn't turn up, which is pretty damning in a pretty crucial game at a major tournament. For a Ukraine team who, I mean, they've had sort of fits and starts at this tournament so far. They've looked all right. That front two has sort of done the business. But when it really mattered, they weren't there. And Austria dominated. I think in the first half, only Italy in that opening game against Turkey have had more shots.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, look, you talk about that. We didn't turn up. That's not beyond disappointing.
You not know, here, not now.
For a team that, you know, and I thought the Ukraine actually looked good in the previous games. I thought,
yeah, so
you know
what,
they look good to cruise through this. And it was a disappointing display. So that's not good enough. When it's on the line in the Euros to just say, well, we didn't turn up. I'm not having that.
Christoph Baumgartner's goal was the difference, and it was bizarre, Jake. Well, not this wasn't bizarre. Seeing David Alaba played in a correct position just makes you wonder, what were they doing in the other games? What is the logic? How can you possibly not put your talisman where he can make an influence on the game?
Well, Franco Foda's certainly copped it over that, for sure. In the opening two games, you see Alaba playing in a very, very deep central defensive role. And he has sort of been wasted for mine, and you could see that. I mean, he was still their most creative and best player technically from the centre of defence. And then when he was unleashed on the left, you could just see him raining in crosses and just, he's very difficult to handle because his delivery is superb and he's so good on the ball and he's just a great player.
Austria against Italy in the next phase as a result of this result, which is probably I think if you're Italy, you're probably reasonably happy with that matchup.
For sure. I think they'll definitely expect to go through and they'll go into that as massive favourites. Austria, for me, go into it without anything to lose. Everyone's talking up Italy. Austria, they've snuck through the group and they're delighted. And but they're not just going to roll over. No one's going to do that. They're not these sort of teams. But the pressure will be on Italy. But Italy will be expecting to go through.
It's quite interesting because Austria, you talk about Finland overachieving. Austria have certainly overachieved. This is their first major tournament final in 67 years since since they finished third in the 1954 World Cup, which was a while back, certainly before my time.
knockout phase, first knockout phase.
Knockout phase. Yeah. So they have been through to second group phases before. But this is a team who I think it's unwise to underestimate because you talk about Alaba being on another level to the rest of the players, but they do have some seasoned campaigners. Yeah. There's some really good Bundesliga talent in there, and you talk about Baumgartner, who's actually been linked to Liverpool as a potential replacement for Gini Wijnaldum, which I think is a bit odd because he plays a far more advanced position than Wijnaldum does.
I think that might be a nice synergy of storylines today that ties that together quite nicely with Wijnaldum being so influential in the other game, which is what we're going to talk about in a moment. But I do agree with what you're talking about. Austria, a lot of these teams that know what they want to do with the talent at their disposal, have quite a lot of pedigree in their team and are making it a competitive Euros because that they know their identity, they know how they want to play, they know if they're going to conserve like Sweden, they know if they're going to have a, or like Finland, they know if they're going to have a crack. And that's what's made this week in particular come down to the wire as well. Netherlands, Wijnaldum, they look good. They look good. Unlike, is it a little bit like Belgium, a little bit like Italy where you go, they've looked good, but I want to see them really up against you know, another tier of opponent.
Yeah, it's that's where you get through the group stages and you're going to start to see these matchups and see if they really can mix it. But if you look on paper, they've got another great squad as well. But they haven't really been tested. They've cruised through the group. A little bit like Belgium, you could say. Italy, all three of them have just cruised through. So it's not until they start to come up against one another, the big guns, that you're going to really see if they can handle it and step up to it.
It was a big day for Memphis and a big day for Gigi Wijnaldum, but Memphis probably needed it more.
Oh, absolutely. We were talking earlier this week when we sort of thought about after the Dutch secured their top spot, how Frank de Boer would kind of approach this game, whether he'd rest stars, how he'd go about it, trying to keep the momentum. And we sort of earmarked Memphis Depay as the one who he'd shown glimpses in the first couple of games, sort of was close to influencing but couldn't quite land that decisive blow. And in this game, he was very influential. And I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence. And Frank de Boer admitted a couple of days ago, once Depay had sealed his move to Barcelona, that it was a bit of a relief for him that distraction had been lifted. And we saw Depay sort of go out there a bit carefree. And again, obviously against North Macedonia, it's not the greatest opponent in the world, with all due respect. But he really turned it on.
Does it really play on your mind if you've got a club, you're representing your country, it's miles away from, you know, that other issue? Because there's a similar story with Harry Kane. Let's talk about Manchester City.
I was going to say that. This is a question for Harry Kane right now. And people are talking about his form and his performances when there's a lot of speculation about his future at club level. And look, it shouldn't. You want to go to these tournaments and have that clear mind and be able to fully focus. But if there's not, and there's that little question mark and cloud over it, no doubt it's on the player's mind. And you can try to say it's not. But in the back of your mind, It's there. And so for sure, the fact that it's done, sealed and delivered, it's like it's just that little weight off you.
I've been trying to think and plot my team of the group phase as we get there. And I'm looking at trying to figure out the formation, trying to figure out who gets in. And one of the players who's given me a headache is Wijnaldum, because I think he probably has to be in there at the moment. Would he be in your 11 of the group stage so far? Well, 11 of the group stage while we get through the next couple of days?
I think definitely. I mean, those runs from deep in midfield have been invaluable for the Netherlands. He's contributed goals, he's in and around the box, but he's also forming that really nice duo with Frenkie de Jong in midfield and is a lot of what they do in the build-up. He's definitely up there for me. I mean, I think we've seen some interesting performances. There's been some up and downs. I'd say, obviously, his teammate Denzel Dumfries walks into that side. Other than that, I mean, I think De Bruyne somehow gets in after playing about 10 minutes of football. Other than that, Luke, who else have you got in there?
Oh, look, you're throwing me on the spot there.
Yeah, you did.
Sorry, mate. Sorry, heads up.
After this morning, look, I think,
I've got a midfield of, the reason why I said it was complicated is I've got Wijnaldum and Locatelli from Italy in there. And I'm thinking, maybe I'll make this,
by the way.
Maybe we'll have to make this just a fantasy 11, not the team of the tournament 11, because there's no way you're putting all those attacking midfielders in the one team, but we're going to try.
Although Wijnaldum can play everywhere. So he could be your ace in the hole in that 11, Dave.
Well, it's interesting talking about the midfield balance you mentioned. Today, in terms of our cross to The Athletic in the UK, I caught up a bit early with Simon Hughes, who's been keeping a very close eye on the Dutch, and he spoke about the midfield balance with Ryan Gravenberch coming in, the youngster who's been touted for big things. He did impress in spurts today. These are part of the decision now Frank de Boer has to make, thinking about how he's going to pick his 11 going into the round of 16.
There's a sense at the moment, maybe on the outside, that Haaland are amongst the favourites. I think there's only really two positions in the team that are sort of still a few question marks over. Donnell Malan played really, really well against North Macedonia, and said about Veikkorst, who is still an excellent option off the bench if Frank de Boer decides to go that way. But I think he likes Veikkorst, so I suspect he'll play in the knockout stages. And then in midfield, obviously Martin Deroner was missing from the victory over North Macedonia, partly because he was on two bookings and could have served a suspension for the knockout stages. So in his place was Ryan Gravenberch, who was excellent, you know, teenage midfielder who I think will soon be playing for one of the big European clubs. But yeah, there's a lot to be excited about Holland at the moment, and if they can get past any of the three teams that they're likely to face in the next round, I really do feel the momentum will be in their favour. Obviously, could be France, Germany or Portugal, which will be a much sterner test than the teams they face in the group stages.
Yeah, thanks to some of his thoughts. It's been great getting the insight from Europe, across Europe, from the beat writers, from The Athletic in the UK, as I've said throughout the tournament. Some of the best football journalism on the planet, so it's been great to hear their insights. That is a day of drama done, but we move on. Actually, before we do, a word on North Macedonia, Jake, because I know you covered that before the tournament. Goran Pandev, you've been caught up in the romance and the absolute history of that story. They covered themselves well during this tournament, and it was a beautiful moment today when he got substituted off. Great touch by the Dutch.
I think they played their role to perfection. Walking in as debutants, no one really expected them to go deep. And I mean, the change in sort of format of the tournament has allowed them sort of that back door in. But they entertained. They gave a good account of themselves. And this morning, and also, so in the first game, Pandev scores their first ever goal at a major tournament. And then this morning, substituted off in about, I think it was the 67th minute. And the game stops. They completely stop a game at a major tournament to say farewell to an absolute icon of the game. And I thought this was, it's a great, great moment. It's tough to beat. I love it. I think it's great. I mean, they also, Wijnaldum presenting him a Dutch jersey with his name on it on the back.
Give them credit. I think they've been fantastic for the tournament. I think, you know, Pendev's goal that he scored, and also in the second game, he scored a goal that was disallowed, was a fantastic finish. They put the ball in the back of the net two times also this morning, yeah. That were disallowed for offside. They had a good crack at it. They entertained, and I think they go away with a lot of respect from the world of football.
I think they're the one beneficiary of the Nations League, which we looked at and sort of thumbed our nose up when it started, going, here we go, another contrived tournament, what's this all about? But actually got that tier of nation playing against teams regularly in competitive football that they were actually a chance of beating. It didn't mean that every game was a World Cup qualifier of competitive football for them, where they would get thrashed. And in the end, there was the sort of the backdoor entry that lowest group got as an incentive to play hard in that tournament. And then you've got North Macedonia at the Euros, who, yes, they were probably the weakest team, but they did a fabulous job throughout and added a lot of flavour to it. And that includes around the world and their diaspora. And if Dave Davidovic has recovered from his night out and his cross overnight, he will be on tomorrow's podcast to digest Croatia's performance. But they've been great scenes. And I think that, for me, sums up the beauty of the tournament, what it means not only to the country there, to the players there, but the diaspora all around the world. There's so many people riding, and that's why we're covering it so hard here, because it means so much to so many people in Australia. But we do move on, because tomorrow is another massive day. The next 2 days are massive. And this group sees the Czech Republic play England at Wembley and Scotland play Croatia at Hampden Park. Well, the group goes down to the wire. England and Czech Republic, who have the inside running at the moment, they can both finish first. They can both go into the lottery of third place finishing. So there's a lot up for grabs. But off the top, the most important or interesting news today is that we know Billy Gilmour is out for Scotland because he has tested positive to COVID in the days after a man of the match performance. And the picture that we thought was so wonderful at the time of Ben Chilwell and Mason Mount embracing their Chelsea teammate has landed the two Chelsea players in self-isolation for England. We do not know, Jake, if they're going to be able to play for England in this massive game.
Just in case you needed another storyline going into this one, I mean, it's an enormous morning for everyone, for all of those teams. Scotland didn't need this. Scotland, obviously, such narrative around them in their first major tournament in such a long time. I think it's 26 years, 27 years, around there. they seem to just be gluttons for punishment, just about. They just, every hurdle they can possibly fall over, they do. But Billy Gilmour, such an important cog in that midfield for Steve Clarke. I think it's an interesting dilemma for the coaching staff, because when you think about the role that Scott McTominay played against England when he was part of a back three, you've got the threat of Luka Modric, but also Mateo Kovacic, who obviously is a teammate of Billy Gilmour and he would have known all about. He's not there. So do you throw McTominay into midfield, in which case you need someone else at the back? Do you bring in a Stuart Armstrong to play in the centre? What does Steve Clarke do?
I think he probably keeps McTominay actually in the centre of defence, because that worked really well against England, and I think they've got to go and aim to ruffle up the midfield in this Croatian contest and just have a crack.
I think you'll see a very similar performance than what they had against England. You know, they're not going to go toe-to-toe with Croatia. They know the quality that Croatia's got. He'll have his game plan, Steve Clark. And I think, like you say, that McTominay will stay in that back three because he did a fantastic job there. But, yeah, it's a blow to Miss Gilmore, the performance that he had. But, you know, these things happen in football. These things happen. And they'll deal with it. Someone will come in, but they'll be up for it. You know what the Scottish are like. Yeah. They're always up for these kind of games. They've got the pressures on Croatia.
All the pressures on Croatia. I think Scotland, you know, they'll lose the quality of Billy Gilmore, but whatever they do with their changes, I think they'll bring in intensity that will show us whether this Croatian vintage is still at the races. I think we know Croatia's going to have the quality, but will they have the tempo, the dynamism, the desire to match the Scots at Hampden Park? I think that's what this game is going to come down to.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been so much said about the role of Luka Modric now within this Croatian team. Obviously, he sort of drove them to the World Cup final a few years ago, but without Ivan Rakitic and a different composition within that Croatian midfield, the sort of influence of Modric and the importance of him, if Scotland can shut him down, I mean, it almost seems as though Croatia don't have a heap of other options.
I think all the pressure is on them. We speak about what they do for Billy Gilmore, what Steve Clarke does with Billy Gilmore. Ben Chilwell hasn't been in the 11. It's been Luke Shaw and it was Kieran Trippier. So that's not as big an issue for Gareth Southgate. Mason Mount is. Mason Mount is a rusted-on starter. Is this the excuse he needs to get Jack Grealish into the 11, Luke? Or will you think we might see a Jordan Henderson thrown in maybe before he's ready or a Jude Bellingham before his time? How would you play it if it's Southgate?
I think there's an opportunity there. I think, of course, Mount's going to be a miss, but they got so much depth in that squad. You know, you got Grealish, you got Sancho. You talk about Henderson. So there's options there that he can play with, and it depends on how Gate wants to really play. So if he wants to be that aggressive, positive, which you'd hope he would be,
but he hasn't shown it necessarily.
He hasn't, and that's been disappointing because they've got such a talented squad. You want to see almost take the shackles off, go and play. They're through. They know they're through already with the points they got, with the 4 points. So go and entertain. Go and play. Let them play with freedom.
So Bridgie called for Harry Kane, gone. Sterling, gone. Grealish in. Rashford in. Sancho in. That's a great bit of punditry, but we know in truth.
I think it has to be said that Bridgie did say that in the aftermath of, I think he was the saddest man in Australia that morning.
The truth is, and it was a great take, but the truth is Harry Kane will play. Gareth Southgate will not drop Harry Kane. So how does he elicit a change in dynamism in such a short space of time? Because you said it, Luke, they've got the quality. They haven't shown it yet.
For me, I think it's all about the quality on the ball of Jack Grealish and Jadon Sancho. Obviously, we've seen such a response from Germany, especially of Jadon Sancho not playing a single part in this tournament so far. He has been so good and so effective and so direct for Borussia Dortmund in the last couple of seasons as he's risen up the world of football. I think he's going to be a massive key to getting him in and around Harry Kane. We see the way that he links up with Erling Haaland at Dortmund week in, week out.
He's only going to be a massive key if he gets on the pitch.
This is very true.
You know, he's not if he's sitting in the stand and it is, he, you know, and the manager needs to back him and Gay needs to play him. Everyone wants to see him play. He's got quality.
It's going to be a real signal of intent whether he does or whether he doesn't. And my suspicion is that he probably won't. We'll probably still see Kane, Sterling and Foden.
But then you lose players like that. Sancho's going to be there. And then when maybe he does get a sniff, he's not at the races because he doesn't feel it. You know, you've got to give these guys something, and someone of his quality's got to be on the pitch.
If Gareth Southgate doesn't start Jack Grealish, I think there's going to be a riot. fans are not going to be happy.
The door has opened with Mount, and I know that you probably suspect Grealish came into the team to play in the front three, not in the middle three. But with doubt on Henderson's fitness, Southgate's conservatism might mean that he won't play a 17-year-old in Bellingham. Particularly, that's a lot of responsibility
Although
on Calvin Phillips
to be ready
and Bellingham.
From what we've seen in the Champions League.
Totally. 100%. Absolutely, he's ready. But to throw Calvin Phillips in with Bellingham is a big call at this time. Then maybe you're right, Luke. Maybe he goes, you know, at worst we're going to come third. So I am going to throw them to the Wolves and see how they go. But he just doesn't seem to be necessarily that type of manager.
These players to the Wolves. Come on, they're top players. They've been playing in the Champions League and internationals. Let's not throw them to the Wolves. He could play any one of those players in the squad. They're going to do a job.
Step up, yeah. So it's so interesting to see. I'd love to see Grealish in. I'd love to see Foden still there. I'd love to see Kane switch on and prove the doubters wrong. Who supports them? Is that the front three? Is it Grealish in for Mount with, say, one pacey person up front to support, which we know Southgate loves. I suspect that's what he will do. We will all find out at 4:30 a.m. tomorrow when the pregame begins for these two games. England against the Czech Republic, who we haven't mentioned in depth, but they will be a wily opponent. They have got the 4 points on the board. They have proved a great a balance between that pragmatic defensiveness that we've seen from so many of those sort of tier nations just below the big ones, but they've got the attacking quality as well. Scotland against Croatia, it is all on the line. Kickoff at 5 a.m. You'll be back, Luke, for that one?
I'll be back. Wouldn't miss it for the world, mate.
Brilliant. And Jake, you'll be on the England game tomorrow morning on deadline, filing frantically.
Oh, I'm excited, mate. I'm excited. What's Southgate going to do?
I don't know. That's the thing. I think we'd like to know by now, but we have absolutely no idea. And that's half the problem. Everyone out there today, thanks so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed our episodes all throughout the tournament and today's edition. And as ever, and as I keep saying, more than ever at the moment, until the next episode of the Gagapod, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.